Welcome to Messing About in Ships, episode number 8, January 31st, 2008. This week we have the return of our friend Captain Kelly Sweeney, and we'll have a roundtable discussion about dredging in Panama. We have our internet ports to call, and finally we have some pod-safe music. Welcome to Messing About in Ships, episode number 8. And this week, we have a special guest with us. Captain Kelly Sweeney returns from his time away in Panama. And he's going to be joining us, or he's joining us right now, for a roundtable discussion in a few minutes. Hey, Kelly, how are you?
Hi, Peter. Hi, John. How you doing?
Good evening.
Welcome aboard, Kelly. It's good to have you here with us this week. We missed you for about the last month, but we've been able to live with a few of your Mariner perspectives while you're away, but great to have you back in person.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be back, and ahoy to all your listeners.
Great. Before we launch into our roundtable, we had a few listener reader comments on our blogs. On the Messing About in Ships blog, Robert Hart is looking for the show notes.
We'll get right on it.
Okay. The Messing About in Ships podcast blog, too, we just got a comment tonight. I think it was on Messing About in Ships podcast blog. Yeah, Margaret Daniels, and she wrote, "Thank you for all of those nice things you said about our son Tom's blog, A Shipwright in Training. I agree with everything you said, and look forward to each new edition. I think it is very educational and fun, too." So, internet port of call last week, my internet port of call last week was A Shipwright in Training, and it's nice to hear from Tom Daniels' mom here in our blog. She approved of our coverage of her son's great blog. By the way, I don't know if you saw it, John, but he wrote a nice post thanking us for profiling the blog, and so it's pretty good. Check it out.
Good stuff.
And finally, in my blog, Karen wrote, "You know who I hope wins," and she was referring to the poster contest, John, that you had set up. So I had posted about the Navy ship, the Whidbey Island's entry into there. The commanding officer, I believe, of the Whidbey Island has put an entry in for the poster, and it's pretty top shelf. It's going to be a tough one to beat, I think. But did you get any other entries, John?
No, not yet. The contest is still open. And like we said last week, we're giving free G-Captain stickers to anyone who posts a poster. And the top one will win a free G-Captain t-shirt. So I know there are a few ships. I think the Tern, working for Osprey Ship Management, is in a... I'll probably win the contest, and I'm sure there are a few out there. But this entry was great. It was from Commander Michael Young, the commander of the island, and he couldn't get his lat and long, but we think he's somewhere in the Persian Gulf.
Yeah, I did a blog post about it, so you go over to T-Flavor blog, you can check out what I wrote from find a little information about the ship. I actually have a link to their website, and I think I have a link to a news article about the ship. So some great photographs that they sent to us, and I think it's a pretty high bar that they set to compete against, but I'm looking forward to seeing what other entries come in. So I don't know if we had anybody plot themselves on our listener community map this week, but if you haven't done it yet, we ask that you please do. I actually did get an email, too, from the cadet aboard the training ship Enterprise, which is the Massachusetts Maritime training ship that we talked about last week. He was really pleased that we covered his stuff in the podcast, and I think they'll be listening and hopefully maybe even making some contributions to our podcast in the future, so keep an eye out for that. It's Christian Conover, who is the fourth class cadet aboard the Enterprise. So I guess this week we'll just jump right into a kind of a roundtable discussion, and we just wanted to catch up with you, Kelly, to find out what you've been up to over the last, month and a half?
Yeah, the week before Christmas, and everybody who reads my column, Professional Mariner, they know that from the Christmas one that I always try to cover for somebody during the holidays out at sea, an officer out at sea, because my dad was a merchant seaman, and growing up I remember many times when he was gone during the holidays, and back when he was going to sea, ships spent a long time getting from one place to another, and they spent a long time in port. So he would be gone for months and months at a time, and, you know, he was pulling into Cape Town, South Africa when I was born, and he was in the middle of the Atlantic my first Christmas. So, you know, my wife and I don't have kids at home, and we decided that, oh, it was about 12 years ago, we decided that how could I give back in some way to the maritime community. And we decided that one way would be to give somebody, the family or somebody who was maybe new to going to sea and not used to being gone during the holidays, a chance to be home. And so, a week before Christmas, I got a call, and it was from the operator, an office called Dredge Operators Incorporated out of Louisiana, and they needed somebody to cover a base position during the holiday on a dredge, the Sivison, U.S. flag dredge, working down in Panama. So I agreed to take it. And I flew down, I think it was the 17th of December, and it was, God, it was a long trip. You guys know, and, you know, sailors, mariners, we go wherever the job is. And so I took the, my wife drove me down to the ferry on Whidbey Island, where I live. And the shuttle picked me up after I got off the ferry, half-hour ferry ride, and I went down to SeaTac Airport, and I hung around there, and then I caught a 5 in the morning flight, and we got out to Houston, and then we hung around Houston for a couple hours, and then took another flight down to Panama. By the time we got down there, and we cleared immigration and customs and got down to the dock, it was probably 11 o'clock at night. So it was a long day.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was snowing and raining when I left, and it was 90 degrees when I got there. So anyway, then I the crew changed on the ship. The dredges, they go nonstop. And so the ship was actually pumping sand ashore, and the people involved in the crew change, of which I was one of them, the bosun and A.B. and some other people, quite a few other people, one of the cooks. Anyway, we all went out on this tugboat that was working with the ship, and we loaded all our gear on the foredeck and hopped on the boat, and then we went over to the ship and made the crew change, and there I was, and I went up to the bridge, and first thing this guy says to me, he says, "Hey, are you the guy that's, are you the writer?" And I said, "Yes, I am," and he goes, "I bought your book."
Really? Oh, wow.
And I said, "Good for you. I'm glad to hear that." So that was kind of cool. That's the way I started.
That's great. Did he recognize you from the dust cover, or did he just know you were coming out there?
He recognized my name.
Yeah.
And then when he saw me, he goes, "Yeah, you look pretty much like the picture, but your beard is a little bit shorter now." I said, "Yeah, I just trimmed it. I tried to look stiffy when I came out here."
That's funny.
So anyway, it was a good tour. The young fellow I relieved, Matt, he was a recent Maine Maritime grad, and all the academies and Hoss Pipers were represented. The skipper was a New York Maritime class of 75, so John School was represented. On the dredge, they don't actually have a standard officer complement. The senior officers are actually called dredge masters. And that's a holdover from a Dutch system, because the Dutch are like the premier dredgers of the world. Because, you know, like, I can't remember what percentage of the Netherlands has been reclaimed from the sea. But anybody who's been over, you know, Rotterdam or, you know, The Hague or Amsterdam has seen how low and flat that country is. And a lot of those, a lot of that land has been reclaimed, and dredging, of course, has played a big part of that. So the Dutch are like the big dredging gurus. They spend a lot of time on it, and actually they were, this ship was chartered to a Dutch outfit. But anyway, dredge master is kind of like the senior mate on watch, and then there's the mate on that watch, and then they have a skipper, and a skipper is separate. So really, the it's not set up, you know, chief mate, second mate, third mate. It's not set up like that. And we stand 12-hour watches, and for the first 15 days, I was on the noon to midnight watch, and then from the last half of the tour, I was on the midnight to noon watch. So anyway, the two dredge masters, one was from Maine, one was a Cal Maritime guy, and there was a Mass Maritime mate, and there was a Hospifer who was on there, who was mate. And of course, me and Cal Maritime. So then later on, the other skipper was a King's Pointer. So all the academies were represented, basically, most of them anyway. And it was a good group, and very interesting work.
What was the work exactly? What were you working on?
Well, basically, we were working on the Pacific side, and we flew into Panama City, and the port for that is Balboa. And we were relatively close to the entrance to the Miraflores locks, the first set of locks on the Pacific side. And what we were doing, we were filling in for the expansion of the container terminal there, Maersk, well, it's Panama Ports Company, but both of those ships that come in there are Maersk ships. And we were filling in an area that's going to just be an expansion of the container terminal. So we would go offshore to the Las Perlas Islands, which I don't know if you guys remember Survivor Panama, when they headed on, was it last year, I think, that was filmed in Las Perlas Islands.
Okay.
And it's about 50 miles offshore, which by dredge standards is like halfway across the ocean.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we went out. We had two places that we had that we dredged. One, we had kind of a fine, silky sand. It was about 5.5 hours away, and then one was about 4 hours away. It was a heavy sand, and then they would call for certain times before we'd leave. They'd say, "Okay, heavy sand on the next run," and we'd go out and dredge and scoop up about 7,000 tons of sand, and then we'd be fully loaded and head back to port, and then go into port and hook up to a pipeline ashore, and then we pump ashore, and it would take about 2 hours for the discharge, and then there was a little bit of remaining that we couldn't pump out, and we go, and they actually have bottom doors on this ship, and they're like, it just opens up to the bottom.
Sure.
And we go to a certain place and dump. Then we head back out, and the whole turnaround was about 15 hours.
Was this part of the expansion project at all?
No, that's a separate deal, but that's coming. Actually, I was talking with Peter about that before we came on air, and I'll be doing a podcast update on some insider information I heard about the expansion and the new locks that are going to be built. Actually, they've actually started, but there's a lot going on with that right now.
So how big was the compliment on the dredge with you?
Well, there were some people that were missing. We were supposed to have an electrician, but he couldn't find a relief for... he wasn't, you know, the permanent guy couldn't come back, and so we were missing a few people, but the basic group was around 22, 23 people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, on each watch, there was what's called a pipeman, and it's really an AB, but The pipeman actually sits in this chair. He controls the drag on, raises, lowers, and basically handles the suction pipes while we're loading under the instruction of the dredge master, the senior mate on watch. And then we had an ordinary on the watch as well, he would take soundings of how much sand we had and open and close valves, washing pipe cleaning valves and bearing wash valves. I tried to get my hands around when I first came on there what we were doing, and having worked on probably 10 tankers in my career, I really kind of thought of it as a tanker for sand, and that's really what it was. There was one big area in the middle called the hopper that was where the 7,000 tons of sand went, and of course we're loading the sand with water, so it pumps. And then they have a series of valves and discharge ports that allow the water to wash over, and then the sand kind of silts down to the bottom, and then it slowly just fills the hopper up. And then when you pump ashore, you take on water, and it makes kind of a slurry, and then they have these big centrifugal pumps that they pump ashore.
So how do you position yourself? I assume you have to do some sort of pattern.
You mean when we're loading?
When you're dredging? Yes.
Yeah. When we're dredging, they had a surveyed area that they were it was laid out that that's where we were supposed to go, and it was designated. You could see lines in the animatronic chart that were placed there for this is the spot. And they surveyed that, and so you could tell what the bottom was and where it was a little bit deeper, because there's a limit to how far these drag arms can go down, and 100 feet is pushing it. And so we would go to areas where, we could dredge. And then we came back and we discharged. We hooked up to this pipe, and they survey that area every day too. There's a survey boat that does soundings, and I think it's a multi-beam scan, and they scan the bottom. And so we knew exactly, pretty much what the depth of the water was wherever we were working. Very interesting.
Interesting, yeah. And I think I'm on a website, and I got a picture of her, and. She's the largest trailing suction hopper dredge in the U.S.? Does that sound right?
Well, I think that title might have been taken last year with the Manson dredge to Glenn Edwards.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure on that. There was a discussion when I was on board, because for many years she was the largest one. But then somebody had told me that the Glenn Edwards, even though it was bigger dimensionally, was unable to load as much, therefore wasn't officially as big. I don't know whether it was a source of pride, but she's right up there.
Yeah.
And our length overall is around 400 foot.
Okay.
And we had about a 72 foot beam. And our light draft would be 14 foot, 15 foot. And we would load and go down to around 36 feet in about 2 hours.
Wow.
And then we come back and pump it off. And we were almost always down by the head. It's just the way that it worked out. And the way the sand goes in that hopper the way they load it, we're almost always down by the head and we were loading. Actually, we always were down by the head.
Interesting. And I think I recall from our conversation before you went, this was your first time working a dredge?
It was. It was my first time, and that was one reason. I mean, I wanted to give, like I said, somebody a break during the holidays, and then when I found out it was a dredge, I was quite excited about it because I'd never been on one. It was a new experience for me.
You ready to go back?
Yeah, I'm ready to go back. We got a month on, month off schedule on that ship. And the guy that I covered for came back, but then somebody else quit. So they asked me if I wanted to do an extra tour, and I agreed that I would do one. But if they hire somebody permanent, you know, they can, you know, they can take it, and I'll hang out.
Cool. Well, thanks for that update. That's all very interesting. Anything else you wanted to add about your dredging experience?
Well, there was a couple things that were very cool that I as a mariner, I loved. The first one was that I was able to stand on the bridge wing and on one side see the Southern Cross and on the other side see the North Star.
Mm.
And, you know, there's only a certain number of latitudes you can do that. And it was really cool to be able to transit at night, and it was at the beginning we were of the tour, we were kind of like at the end of the rainy season, and then all you could just tell when the weather changed around the first week of January, boom, we were in the dry season, and every night it was just clear and beautiful stars, and it was so cool to be able to stand on that bridge wing and see the Southern Cross and the North Star at the same time. I remember the first time I saw the Southern Cross when I was on the training ship Golden Bear. And, you know, I've always thought, yeah, it's cool. It's part of being a sailor. I saw some stingrays fly out of the water in formation.
Wow.
I didn't know they did this. But we had taken a load, and we were coming back, and all of a sudden I see a stirring in the water, and I thought it might have been dolphins. I look over to port, a couple points to port, and I get the binoculars on there, and there was about 10 stingrays. It flew out of the water all together and glided about 30 feet out of the water and went back in.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, that was cool. I mean, that's only something that only a sailor can see.
Yeah.
And coming into port one day, we were getting ready to go to the dump area, the discharge area, and I hear on the radio, hey, look at that crocodile over there. And so I look over in our port quarter, and sure enough, this crocodile was huge. I'd say he was at least 10 feet. And he's sitting there with a big smile on his face, and I'm thinking, wow, he must have been well fed. I look over not far from there, and there's a group of kayakers floundering in the water. Because they're practicing their kayaking over there, a group of them. And he's looking at, and I can just see him thinking to himself, which one am I going to have for dinner? He's huge.
And did he?
He hung out. He was eating a kayaker earlier in the day.
There you go.
You know, because he kind of just looked at it. He was sitting there in the sun, and he was thinking, I'm not going to bother. And they were oblivious. I mean, they were making all this commotion and trying to ride the boat. And he's sitting there looking like, which one do I want? But he decided not to, so they were lucky that day.
Very cool.
Other than that, it was a good tour. The food was great. We had good cooks. Of course, I was on there for Christmas dinner and New Year's. We pulled out of the slip right at New Year's, and of course everything exploded into fireworks and Balboa as we were going out. So that was a cool send-off. And a good way to start the new year. And it was a good tour, and I was very happy to be on a dredge, check out the ship. And for any of the listeners who and I know a lot of you guys have a lot of Academy listeners, this is a good place for somebody to break into the business. It's a good job for somebody who wants to learn ship handling. You're going to do more ship handling on this dredge in a month's tour than you know a deep sea ship you'll get on an entire career. So all your listeners from the academies, you guys and gals, think about going out there and trying out a dredge. And for those of the cadets, and I heard this, there might be something interesting. They pay cadets $100 a day to be cadets on board that ship. So any of the cadets who are thinking about what ship do I want to do my commercial shifting on, they might consider the Stuyvesant, because I heard they pay $100 a day. When I was a cadet, man, I would have thought, $100 a day, I'll take it.
Yeah.
So.
Good stuff. Well, good advice for our listeners. Well, that's cool. That's very good. Thank you for sharing that with us, and it's great to have you back with us, too.
Great to be back, guys. I love you guys and what you're doing. It's wonderful.
Well, you're a part of it, so you're part of this team, part of the bridge team here, so we're glad to have you back on board.
Thank you.
We typically do this internet ports a call, and John, I think you were handing yours off to Kelly this week. Is that what you're going to do?
Kelly has a very interesting one, and I definitely community. I bought it myself, and it's got some real gems of information there. Tell us about it.
Okay, well, the I appreciate that, John, and the website that I think would be for me this week would be maritimelicensing.com, and that's a blog and a website that's run by Norlene Schumer. And Norlene is happens to be the lady who signed my last license. As a matter of fact, those who have the book or get the book, my book From the Bridge, at the beginning of the second chapter, there's a picture of me and Norlene and another gal from Seattle the day I got issued my master's license. And so you can actually see a picture of her. But she, for many years, I think she was in the Coast Guard for like 33 years as a civilian. And she used to be the head, or I think number two or number one evaluator for licensing and documentation at the Puget Sound Regional Exam Center. She would be the one who would determine whether your sea time qualified to, for a license, what license you would be qualified for, whether you could test or not, what you needed, if you needed more classes, if these were acceptable, if your training was, good for sea time. All that evaluation she used to do. She used to be the head one and really knows her stuff. And now she's retired. But she's running maritimelicensing.com for the benefit of mariners. I'll guarantee that if you have questions about, hey, does my sea time on this count? I have this, do I get two for one? Is it this time and a half? Have I had 12 hours on the bridge, which I had on the dredge? All the questions that people have about whether their sea time is good, documentation, whether this class is acceptable, this is the place to go. And she has a reputation for being tough, but being fair. And she'll give you a straight answer, and she definitely has her heart in the right place for merchant mariners and people who want to advance in the industry. So it's maritimelicensing.com, and her name's Norlene Schumer. I highly recommend people go check that out.
Great. We'll definitely put a link in the blog, in the show notes.
Great.
Yeah, that's really important information. It's challenging for mariners, especially you're out to sea and you might not have all the scope in on what's going on with the Coast Guard, and but it's changing every minute now with the TWIC cards and the NMC. I think it's important.
My internet protocol this week is we're taking a different tack here. Usually we have maritime sites, but we've made a commitment to tell people about all kinds of different internet sites. And mine this week will be one that has been a bit of an inspiration for this podcast, and it's a marketing and PR podcast that is done twice weekly, and it's called For Immediate Release. And it's done by a gentleman in England and one in California. It's Neville Hobson's in England, and Shell Holtz is in California, and it's the show is called For Immediate Release, the Hobson and Holtz Report, and it's basically this is what they say. For immediate release, the Hobson and Holtz Report is a twice-weekly podcast of Neville Hobson and Shell Holtz, a pair of communication professionals who think they have something to say. Hobson is based in Workingham, Berkshire, England, and Holtz is located in Concord, California. Their podcast is updated on Mondays and Thursdays. It has been an inspiration for this podcast in a way, in that we try to make a commitment to have a regular schedule. These guys are doing it twice a week, an hour plus each time. Like their podcast, John and I decided to come with this joint venture to two of us talking about maritime matters. And For Immediate Release is something that I recommend highly to anybody who has any interest in the business world or technology or new media, social media. These guys are at the cutting edge of it. They always have something very interesting to say, and it's a podcast that I learn from every week and religiously load it into my iPod every week, and and can't wait to listen to it. So it's for immediate release, and you can catch it on iTunes, and highly recommended. So I don't know if John's made it back with us. John, you there? I don't think he has. So it's you and me, Kelly.
Sounds good, Peter.
That's basically all I had. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to the show this week?
Well, I wanted to let people know that if they go to professionalmariner.com, they can read my current articles online, and, of course, the archived ones. And if they go to the Mariner Speak part of the website, they can read three blog entries that I put in one a week when I was out there, with a few more details. And everybody should look for an article on the on my tour on there, where I'll give a few more pictures of me and some of my shipmates coming up in the magazine in a while. And I wanted to pass on that I am a avid reader of gcaptain.com, and if you want to keep up on things, I think John's blog is a great way to keep up on maritime stuff. And of course, you do Sea Fever, and I am glad to hear that you're continuing to help people, young people, enter the industry, because this is something I firmly believe in, that we have to pass the torch on. You know, the average age of the merchant marine is, I read in the late 40s or early 50s.
Yeah, 51, I think.
Yeah, and so you have your finger right on it. We need to bring up the young people who are going to be the future captains and chief engineers, and, of course, the shoreside specialists as well, that are going to keep our industry going and strong.
Yeah, well, we're excited about the opportunities there. John, did you get back on the line?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay, great. we're closing up here, John, but do you have anything you want to say before we...
No.
Okay, cool. It's great to have you back, Kelly. Next week we'll have your regular Mariner's Perspective, and we look forward to that. And Kelly, did you give people the way to contact you? I know you told them you point them in the direction of the articles, but and the blog over there at Professional Mariner, but how about your email address over there?
My email address is CaptainSweeney at ProfessionalMariner.com, CaptainSweeney at ProfessionalMariner.com. And, yeah, Peter, I've got some things I definitely have to put on that everybody, you know, needs to hear. I got some insider information on what's going on with the Panama Canal that John mentioned a little earlier in the broadcast. And I also have some info on the TWIC card. Stories that I've heard that are very disconcerting, and I'm very concerned about, because I think the word needs to get out on. So I'll be putting them on sometime here in the near future.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to that. Listeners can get a hold of us through our show blog, which is messingaboutinships.com. You can leave a comment there for any one of the entries, and we'll get it and reply to it. You can send us an email at podcast@messingaboutinships.com. Of course, you can go over to gcaptain.com, where you get the whole wide range of ways to interact. You get the blog. John writes a great blog every day. You get the Discover a News site, which is just always fascinating. The very useful, informative forums. And finally, the web tools, which, I think is one of the most underutilized sections of gcaptain. So there's all kinds of ways to interact with us. By gcaptain, you can visit my blog, which is seafever.org, and that's sea-fever.org, and leave me a comment there. Finally, we love audio comments, although we haven't been inundated by them. We'd love to have yours, so you can get us at MAIS Podcast. That stands for Messing About in Ships. That's MAIS Podcast. And finally, we have a phone number you can leave an audio comment, and we'll get it into the show. That number is 206-973-7000. It's 206-973-7000. So anyway, it's been another great week. Enjoyed working with both of you guys, and looking forward to hearing from and talking to you next week.
Sounds good, Peter.
Okay.
Good sailing to you and all the listeners.
Thanks. You too, Kelly.
This week's music comes again to us from the PodSafe Music Network. It's a band that had a bunch of hit singles in the early 1990s with a platinum album, and The band is Big Head Todd and the Monsters, and this song is Ever Since You Pulled Me Under.
Sugar shake down to the earth, let's sing now. Sweet so fast and on the way. So no man can't have that day now. Let feminine love rule the day. All that woman, yeah.